Well, a few weeks ago here at Longfleet Baptist Church, we started a series called Hot Topics. And we began by looking at sacraments and ordinances and what a Baptist approach to those should be. And then, was it last week or the week before, Stephen looked at money and material possessions. And Janet looked at how we're Christians in the community. And this week, perhaps we're getting into the first really contentious one. Women in leadership. Women in leadership. You may have heard of the female Scottish missionary called Mary Slessor. She was born in 1848, and in 1876, having undergone training in Edinburgh, she went out to Nigeria, where she was confronted with all sorts of difficulties, not least contracting malaria and having to return to the UK for some time before going back out, and having to deal with the local pagan religions, which included human sacrifice and infanticide. Slessor famously wrote notes in the margins of her Bible. I know someone else who does that. Copious notes in the margins of her Bible. And next to this passage in 1 Timothy, where Paul says, "I suffer not a woman to teach or have authority over a man," she had written, "Nay, Paul, laddie, that'll not do." And quite frankly, it won't do. It certainly won't do for us as Baptists. The head of our denomination, the General Secretary of the Baptist Union, is a woman. The last minister of this church was a woman. The church secretary of this church who stood here and preached last Sunday is a woman. Not only that, but we know that Paul interacted with female church leaders. When Simon Gray, the regional minister, came a few weeks ago, we looked at Lydia in Philippi. There's Phoebe in Romans 16, who Paul calls a deacon and a leader. Also in Romans 16 is Junia, who Paul calls an apostle. There's Priscilla, a church leader who is mentioned six times in the New Testament and whose name is usually listed before her husband's, suggesting that she was the senior leader and senior teacher in that married couple. And if that wasn't enough, in his next letter to Timothy, 2 Timothy 1, Paul mentions Timothy's mother and grandmother, Lois and Eunice, and he credits them with teaching Timothy his faith, his Christian faith. So Paul definitely interacted with women teachers and leaders. And he certainly seems to have approved of women teaching and even leading men in church environments. So what are we to do with these two passages? 1 Corinthians 14 and 1 Timothy 2. Had Paul suddenly come to the realization that women shouldn't be allowed to teach and have authority? Did he decide, actually, you know what, Lydia, Junia, Priscilla, Phoebe, Lois, Eunice, I was wrong. You're not allowed to teach any longer. That is a possibility, a slim one. But it is a possibility nonetheless. Paul could be saying, it stops now and it never happens again. I don't allow women to teach or have authority, and no one else should either, ever. Possible, but highly unlikely. Far more likely is that something else is going on. So let's have a closer look at that 1 Timothy passage. If you've got your Bibles there, beginning at 1 Timothy 2, verse 11. When a woman learns, whoa, Paul, hold your horses. What on earth are you talking about? Women don't learn. They don't go to the synagogue and sit at the feet of the rabbi. They don't go into the temple and learn from priests. They don't go into universities and listen to philosophers. No, no, Paul, sorry. A woman's place is in the home. The only thing she needs to learn is how to cook, clean, and look after her husband and children. Do you remember the story of Mary and Martha and how shocked Jesus' disciples were when he allowed Mary to sit at his feet and learn from him with the men? Shocking behavior from Jesus and from Mary. This just wasn't done. Most women in the Roman Empire, and certainly Jewish women in Palestine, didn't learn. So the very first thing we need to understand is that these four words, when a woman learns, were radical. They were progressive. They were gospel good news to the women who first heard them. Paul, a highly trained Jewish Pharisee and rabbi, allows women to learn. Radical. Who ever heard of such a thing? So let's examine this short passage through that lens, going completely against the cultural norms of the day. A male religious leader allows women to learn alongside men. We carry on. When a woman learns, she must learn in quietness and full submission. Well, so what? That's how we learn. You're all sitting in quietness and submission to me. When you were at school, you sat quietly and submitted to your teachers. Those of you that are or have been teachers and lecturers fully expect your students to be quiet and to submit to your authority. I've preached to congregations of thousands, including politicians, generals, ambassadors. They've all sat quietly and submissively. This is simply how everyone learns, quietly and submitting to the authority of the teacher. And so Paul says, I allow women to learn, but they must abide by the same rules as the men. Paul, this highly trained Pharisee and rabbi, had the utmost respect for learning, for education, and respect for the educational environment. And that's what he expects from his learners. He doesn't mean you sit there absolutely silently, never discussing what you're learning. He means you have a calm and quiet approach to learning. You show the appropriate respect to the teacher and the appropriate respect to the learning process. In 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, our first reading, Paul again is teaching about learning. And the early church meetings would have been modelled on Jewish synagogues. The men, and the men only, would have sat around the rabbi, listening and discussing and answering and asking sensible questions. Likewise, remembering that these letters to Timothy were written when Timothy was in Ephesus, a Greek city, and that Corinth was a Greek city, philosophy and religion would have been taught in a very similar way. The teacher sitting and the men asking and discussing sensible questions quietly and submissively to the teacher. And so suddenly, into this established system of learning, Paul is introducing a group of people with no religious or philosophical education at all, and no understanding of the education system. And he says to this group of people, respect the system, respect the teachers. And if you have a question, if there's something you don't understand, don't interrupt the teacher. Don't embarrass yourself or your husband or the rest of the church. Wait until you get home and discuss it with your husband. Not specifically because he's a man and you're a woman, but because he's theologically educated and used to being in that environment and you're not. How many of you come up to me before or after a service or when I'm visiting you or drop me an email or a text and ask for my theological views on something? Not specifically because I'm a man, but because I'm the church's teacher. So far, so good. Paul allows women to learn, and he expects them to respect the established education system, just the same as he expects the men to. No problem. The next line in our passage from 1 Timothy 2 is a problem. I do not permit a woman to teach or assume authority over a man. She must be quiet. There are some churches and some Christians who say, well, that's that. It's there in black and white in the Bible. Paul didn't allow women to teach or have authority over men, and neither should we. No historical context, no cultural context, no situational context. And they claim that this is a rule that is to be obeyed 2,000 years after Paul wrote it. If that's true, if Paul was laying down the law forever, what are we supposed to do with Lois and Eunice, with Lydia, Phoebe, Junior, Priscilla? What are we supposed to do with Deborah and Jael, with Abigail, with Miriam, Zipporah? Biblical women who all exercised authority over men. There is a possibility that Paul is laying down the law forever. But I think it's highly unlikely. And you would have to ignore vast swathes of the rest of the Bible. Not least Paul's own letters and his own experiences in Acts. So what is going on here as Paul writes to his church leaders in Ephesus and in Corinth? Well, I go back to that point that I made earlier. This is the first time that women have been allowed into a theological and philosophical educational environment. And certainly the first time they've been allowed to learn alongside men. And because of that, the women don't know how to behave in this environment. They don't have the knowledge that the men do. They don't have the learning skills that the men do. And if they don't have the learning skills, they certainly don't have the teaching skills. So you may have guessed, but I don't think that Paul is laying down the law forever. He couldn't have imagined a time when everyone, male and female, went to school from 5 years old to 18 years old. He couldn't have conceived of universities where men and women sit and study together. He couldn't even conceive of half the knowledge that we have today. Paul is speaking into the context of his first century Greco-Roman church leaders as they seek to establish Christianity and work out its relationship to Judaism and the broader Greco-Roman culture. Paul takes education incredibly seriously. Born in Tarsus, which we know was a Greek university city, he studied in Jerusalem under Gamaliel, and we know who Gamaliel was, one of the most highly respected rabbis of the day, also a progressive rabbi. And so I don't think Paul is saying, I don't allow women to teach because they're women. I think he's saying, I don't allow women to teach because at the moment, they don't have the skills or the knowledge that it takes. And there is a lesson there for us today, a challenge for us today. Who do you allow to teach you? And who do you allow to have spiritual authority over you? Where did your teacher learn? Who are they accountable to? To become a Baptist minister, you spend at least 6 years in education and training. You go before a ministerial recognition committee 3 times during that process. Before you begin, when you finish college, and when you finish your probationary newly accredited minister period. 6 years and 3 times you go before MinRec. In these days of internet and TV, we must be especially cautious of who we allow to teach us and who we allow to have spiritual and moral authority over us. Where were they educated, and who are they accountable to? Something that's always perplexed me about this passage in Timothy is verse 14, where Paul seems to be saying that because Adam was made first and then Eve, and Eve was deceived and not Adam, women shouldn't have authority over men. And I'll be honest, this has always seemed to me to be a bit of a childish playground sort of argument. I had it first. No, I had it first. I was there first, not you. If that is what Paul is saying, it seems like a really weak argument. And furthermore, the curse of Adam and Eve was broken by Christ. It doesn't apply to Christians at all. And Paul himself says that in Romans, in 1 Corinthians, in Galatians. Just why does Paul tag this bit about Adam and Eve onto this passage? I suggest that there's something else going on here that Paul and Timothy and the other early church leaders were dealing with. It's a bit complicated, and you may well think it's a bit far-fetched, and fair enough, but bear with me. As I've said multiple times before, and will no doubt remind you again, the world at the time of Paul was saturated in religion. Everyone believed something. Jews and Samaritans in the Middle East, astrology in the Far East, Greco-Roman gods as you moved west and further west into Europe, the Germanic and Norse gods. Remember again, Acts 14, Paul and Barnabas are mistaken for Mercury and Zeus. What we often fail to take into consideration as we read Acts and the New Testament letters is that Paul and the other apostles and other leaders are dealing with this daily. This saturation of religion influences every single part of everyone's life. We know from history that at the time Paul was active, there was a heresy known as Gnosticism. It was loosely based on some of the Jewish beliefs. But Gnosticism taught that physical things were evil, and therefore a god that created physical things was evil. And so in Gnosticism, Yahweh, the Jewish god, the Christian god, is evil because he created. One of the Gnostic creation stories taught that Yahweh created Eve first. Then he created Adam, and then he lied to them. In this Gnostic creation story, the serpent was good and was trying to persuade Adam and Eve of the truth. The truth. And we see elements of this Gnostic heresy being alluded to in the New Testament. In Revelation, John seems to be dealing with elements of this heresy. Paul speaks of false teachers and he talks about Adam. And even Jesus warns of false teachers who appear to teach the truth. And we also know that this Gnostic heresy was picked up by women and taught by women because women were marginalized from the mainstream religions. So at the time of Paul, we have women who are teaching that Eve was created first and that Yahweh was evil. It seems likely to me that this is what Paul is dealing with in 1 Timothy 2:12 to 14. So verse 12 would translate as, "I do not allow a woman to teach that she has preeminence over men. She must be quiet." And that is a legitimate translation of that sentence. "I do not allow women to teach that she has preeminence over men. She must be quiet." And that would then make far more sense of the following sentence: "For Adam was formed first, then Eve, and Adam was not the one deceived. It was the woman who was deceived and became a sinner." We would then understand these short passages to be about Paul giving general advice to Timothy about uneducated women in a learning environment, and specific advice about dealing with and correcting women who were teaching this Gnostic heresy. I did say some of you might find that a bit far-fetched and perhaps a little bit difficult to follow, but we know that Paul was interacting with this Gnostic heresy. So I could easily speak for another hour or so on this topic, but don't worry, I'm not going to. This is the shortened version. But a number of possibilities for us to ponder on. Maybe Paul meant what our English translations say, and he meant it forever. Despite the clear biblical evidence of women teaching and having authority over men, Paul says, no, it stops now, and women must never be allowed to teach or have authority over men. Far more likely, Paul is speaking into the cultural, social, and situational context of his day. The context that he and Timothy and the other early church leaders find themselves in. Paul has a deep, deep respect and love of learning. Counterculturally, he allows women to learn, but he expects them to follow the established rules of the educational system. And perhaps an even more specific context, Paul is confronting a heretical Gnostic teaching which was gaining popularity among women and threatening the very survival of the early Christian church. So I do hope that whether you're male or female, you love learning. I hope that you love studying your Bible and theology. I hope that you continue to sit at the feet of Jesus, our teacher and rabbi, because he's given all Christians, both men and women, the responsibility to preach and to live out his gospel.